I don't believe it.
Why would the CIA put out this story?
I'm not sure they put it out. I think the Democrats are putting it out.
What? Democrats? They'd never.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
They're everywhere.
Yes, I'm stuck in.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. Up in Oregon on 91.7 FM KYAQ on the Central Coast and 106.7 FM KSO in Cottage Grove. In Lancaster, Pennsylvania on 93 FM WLRI. In Hawaii on 88.5 FM KAKU in Maui. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN 94.1 FM. In Palinville, New York, 102.9 FM WLPP. In Bellingham, Washington on KZAX 94.9 FM. And in Minneapolis, St. Paul on AM 950. KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. We're also heard coast to coast and around the globe, streaming on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, GDPR, Revolution 99, Detour Talk, Radio Monterey, and Radio Sputnik, blanketing planet Earth 5 days a week. I'm glad you could join us. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. All right, we've got news coming up in a bit. Unfortunately, none of it good on the attempt at an unprecedented presidential election recount in Wisconsin, in Michigan, and in Pennsylvania, with court decisions in two of those states since we last spoke. That's coming up shortly. Neither of those decisions are encouraging for those of us crazy folks who believe that citizens ought to be able to oversee and verify election results otherwise reported only by computers run by the government and private corporations and never verified by any actual human beings. But first, a number of news items, actually, of note broke just after airtime on Friday. That's been happening a lot lately. You likely already heard that the Washington Post released what's been regarded as a blockbuster report on Friday night, charging that a, quote, consensus of U.S. intelligence organizations believe Russian state actors, in other words, the Russian government, actively attempted to influence the U.S. election on behalf of Donald Trump over Hillary Clinton. According to leaks from congressional sources briefed on a U.S. intelligence assessment earlier this year, quote, actors known to the intelligence community and part of a wider Russian operation to boost Trump and hurt Clinton's chances provided WikiLeaks with thousands of emails from the DNC and Hillary Clinton's campaign chair, John Podesta. The intelligence assessment, however, was not released publicly. The Obama administration said on Friday, as we reported here, that they were preparing a report to be given to Congress and maybe to the public before the president leaves office in January. In the Washington Post report, they cite the CIA has concluded in a secret assessment that Russia intervened in the 2016 election to help Donald Trump win the presidency rather than just to undermine confidence in the U.S. electoral system, according to officials briefed on the matter. It is the assessment of the intelligence community that Russia's goal here was to favor one candidate over the other to help Trump get elected, said a unnamed senior U.S. official briefed on an intelligence presentation made to U.S. senators. Quote, that's the consensus view. For their part, Team Trump dismissed the Post's reporting out of hand, charging that it comes from the same people who were wrong about Saddam Hussein having weapons of mass destruction, and besides, as they said in their statement, the election ended a long time ago in one of the biggest electoral college victories in history. It's now time to move on and make America great again. Of course, the election didn't end a long time ago. In fact, it hasn't even happened yet, in truth. At least not until the Electoral College actually votes on December 19. But as to the charges that these are the same people that Saddam Hussein that said that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, there is at least some truth to that. Writing in response to the Washington Post's report on Friday night, Marcy Wheeler, who has spent years investigating and, frankly, being correct about the George W. Bush administration's misused intelligence about WMD in Iraq, she compared the leaked information over the weekend to the leaked information citing aluminum tubes purchased in Iraq before we invaded there after 9/11 as evidence that they were creating nuclear weapons, those aluminum tubes. That's how they were used. That, in any event, happened even though the intelligence assessment about those tubes had actually cast doubt on that cherry-picked evidence that was otherwise publicly used by the Bush administration to justify war. So is something similar being done here with this leaked intelligence now, charging that Russian, or at least that Russia acted to help Donald Trump defeat Hillary Clinton in this year's elections? Joining us now to help us understand all of this and what we know and what we don't know about it all is Marcy Wheeler of EmptyWheel.net. She's an independent journalist who has been covering legal issues surrounding national security, civil liberties, and presidential politics for years. She's been a contributor to The Guardian, Salon, The Progressive, The Intercept, and others, and she's the author of Anatomy of Deceit, How the Bush Administration Used the Media to Sell the Iraq War and Out a Spy. Well, that book might be suddenly a helpful reference guide again these days. Marcy Wheeler, welcome back to the broadcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right. You have spent years reading into reporting on secret intelligence assessments, including the mischaracterization of that infamous assessment used to justify war on Iraq. Following what has turned out to be regarded as an explosive Washington Post report on another secret assessment now based on the leaked information Friday night, you cited those old aluminum tubes issues from the Iraq War in a post headlined "Unpacking the New CIA Leak, Don't Ignore the Aluminum Tube Footnote." So before we get your thoughts on what we know and don't know so far about these allegations against Russia, remind us of that old aluminum tubes footnote and how the real intelligence assessment was mischaracterized, I guess, is the best way to put it, by the Bush administration to help the U.S. go to war in Iraq over a decade ago.
Well, just so I distinguish that my view does not back Donald Trump, which I've been accused of in the last couple of days. If you recall that as Bush was rolling out his plan for an Iraq war, Dick Durbin said, can we have an NIE before we go to war? Can you go and make sure that everyone in the intelligence community agrees on this?
A national intelligence assessment, is that right?
Estimate, yeah.
NIE,
Which is precisely what President Obama, which is what is understood that President Obama called for last week. President Obama, the White House, makes a formal announcement, hey, we're going to do an NIE on Russia, and then later that day, this big story in the Washington Post. So at the time, everyone remembers it like it's seared in our brain, but in early September 2002, before the NIE was done, somebody leaked to the New York Times and said, intelligence, the spooks all believe that these tubes are intended for a nuclear weapon. And then Dick Cheney and Condi Rice and Donald Rumsfeld went on the Sunday TV and they said, look, oh my gosh, the intelligence community believes that these aluminum tubes are proof that Saddam Hussein is going to have a mushroom cloud. So it's not, you know, there were intelligence professionals who were behind the scenes saying, no, wait, these aluminum tubes are not for nuclear weapons. They're for rockets. They have a known use. But as they were trying to win that argument behind closed doors, the administration and whoever leaked it to the New York Times, which was probably also the administration, were preempting that discussion by saying the story is that these aluminum tubes are for nuclear weapons. So it's not so much that the CIA is horrible or no intelligence people got it right on precisely this point in 2002, because they did. It's that this process of doing a formal review can be short-circuited when people release anonymous leaks to the press and say, here's what the answer is. We already know. We don't, you know, you don't have to wait for the report. Here's the answer.
Because these NIEs, these National Intelligence Assessments, this is essentially, what is it, like 17 different intelligence agencies that all sort of put their various intelligence into one place in this report. And then, at least in the case of Bush, they cherry-picked the concerns about the aluminum tubes, but they didn't tell anyone about the mitigating information about those tubes that they might not be for WMD. Right? Does that summarize it accurately?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There were two agencies that said, wait a second, we don't buy this aluminum tube story. That what's called a dissent, or it's called it's been called a footnote. It's actually, I'm looking at it right now. It's a text box where it said, here's what the State Department's intelligence people think.
Okay.
Department of Energy was the other dissenter. Ron Wyden complains forever that people, you know, more than half of his colleagues did not read the NIE.
Mm-hmm.
They got their news, they got their argument from what Dick Cheney said on the Sunday shows.
Right.
And so they all voted for the Iraq War without saying, wait a second, the intelligence case isn't, you know, so the entire point of the NIE is to summarize these and alert the people who read it if there are big dissents. And there were at least significant dissents on key issues,
mm-hmm.
and those got kind of drowned out and didn't, you know, most people didn't consider them before they voted for what has been a catastrophic 13-year war, right?
Yeah, exactly. And which brings me now to what you cite as this term that was used in the Washington Post report, this consensus. From U.S. intelligence agents that, in fact, Russia was involved in the 2016 election, either to disrupt it or, more seriously, help Donald Trump against Hillary Clinton. So you described consensus as a term of art here in when describing these types of secret reports publicly. So what do you mean by term of art, and why is that? Why did that word trigger at least some alarm on Friday night for you?
Well, just as an example, there was a report on October 7th
mm-hmm.
that it was released under the headings of Department of Homeland Security and Office of Director of National Intelligence, but at least that was presented as a consensus. What was supported by that report was effectively Russia did it, right?
Mm-hmm.
They weren't getting into Russia did it to, you know, to help Donald Trump take over the world. They said Russia did it.
Right.
And so that was a document, at least as we've been led to understand it, that the entire intelligence community, particularly agencies like the Federal Bureau of Investigation, which is investigating this, that everyone was willing to sign off on. What the anonymous report on Friday suggested is somebody said, not just said it's consensus, but also said it's basically quite clear that the reason why Russia did this is to get Trump elected,
mm-hmm.
even though the next paragraph later they said, well, there are some disagreements. They're minor disagreements. And it just seemed fairly clear that what was being presented as a statement that everyone in the intelligence community could buy off on probably wasn't something everyone was yet buying off on. And sure enough, the next day the same reporters came up and showed how many more concerns about the quality of evidence, I think, that the FBI has.
So there still remains, A, disagreements about the intelligence within the intelligence report that we have yet to see. And then B, what you cite is that, essentially, you're suggesting that these are Democrats here who have an interest in getting out this concern about Russia. In other words, to sort of say, hey, it's not our fault we lost. Russia stole it from us. Is that the concern that you have in looking at these reports at this time or on Friday night, that they're not being accurately spelled out for the American people because there's folks with an agenda here?
Well, I'll add one, which is that I and other people, including the former ambassador to Russia, Mike McFaul, and mm-hmm. Michael Hayden, former CIA NSA director, have both suggested that a more likely explanation than either just tampering or deliberately getting Trump elected is that Putin was retaliating for what he sees as, and I'm not agreeing with Putin on all of these, but for what he sees as covert tampering to undermine his own government, Ukraine's Russian-favoring government in 2014, Gaddafi in 2011, and Bashar al-Assad in 2012. And three of those, of course, Hillary was involved in there were protests in Russia in 2011 that Putin explicitly blamed Hillary for at the time. And so Putin thinks that the U.S. government has been tampering in other, has basically been attempting, and in some cases succeeding in regime change that conflict with Russian interests, and Hillary has been involved in most of those. And so it is not a big stretch to believe that Putin would go out and retaliate against that. And the reason that third element is important is, one, because it's still not one of the ones that CIA is reportedly considering, which seems kind of nutty until you consider that those are all CIA covert operations to the extent that they exist. I'm not saying anything about Ukraine or Russia, but we know that the CIA has trained a bunch of so-called moderate rebels to overthrow Bashar al-Assad in Syria. And so if it is in fact the case, you know, if that's why Putin did it, then how does the calculus on the value of those operations change?
So in other words, at least as Putin might be viewing it, we've done it. The U.S. has done it. The U.S. has tried to influence other elections. In this case, Ukraine 2014 within the Russian sphere of influence, that the U.S. has tried to do it. So Russia might feel that it's perfectly appropriate for them to do so as well.
Well, that's the start of it. And I do think that's what Putin thinks. But more importantly, you know, the U.S. has always gotten away with the CIA engaging in covert activities overseas, and never has the blowback. I mean, there's been incredible blowback, right? Arguably, 9/11 was blowback from a CIA covert operation targeted at Russia, right? But none of it has blown back in this way that somebody would come and tamper, successfully or not, with our democratic elections to. You know, and then you get into the fact that Trump is just gravy for Putin, right? You know, Trump is also an authoritarian. Trump also wants to be a petrostate. Trump doesn't think that internal repression is a big. He loves it, right? He celebrates it with President Duterte in Philippines. So I think that it's a very different conversation, and should it be though? That's the other question, Brad. Is like Russia hacked one of our presidential candidates' networks, and then leaked it in an attempt to do something. One thing that at least the White House has claimed is that Russia did not succeed at, or did not even apparently try on Election Day to kind of go into the voting systems and change actual totals, which was the real fear, right? That Russia would go in and just kind of wipe out the vote. I keep saying, well, why do we need Russia to do that? We have the Republicans to do that.
Well, and you have insiders, and to be frank, I don't know what the evidence that leads them to believe that did not happen, to be frank, because they won't let us count the damn ballots, but that's for the next segment. What happened?
Great segue, right?
I want to ask you, actually, because you're in Michigan, I do want to ask you about that specifically, but I'm trying to understand what happened now. In other words, what is new now? This intelligence assessment, as I believe you highlight, actually was given to these senators back in September. And suddenly now it makes its way to the media. And there's this new idea that Russia is not just trying to disrupt, but was specifically pulling for Donald Trump. So I'm trying to figure out, A, what is that new information that supports the idea that they were pulling for Donald Trump? And since you have been following this so closely, Marcy Wheeler, you know, there's a lot of talk about Russia did this, Russia did that. But as far as I can tell, the public information shows, you know, some IP addresses in Russia that could either be non-state actors, you know, just people who live in Russia, or even people who live elsewhere. I hate to support Donald Trump in any of this, but, you know, he says it could be a guy in New Jersey. Well, it could be a guy in New Jersey spoofing IP addresses in Russia, at least according to the available public information. And you've seen more of it than me. So help me out, clarify what I'm understanding and not understanding on all of that.
So first, as to whether and how Russia hacked or what the claim behind Russia hacking is, you're right that what the main part of the argument has always been these Democratic targets got phished. So they got emails that said, click this link and do X, Y, and Z. In most cases, it was a Gmail, an apparent Gmail link saying, change your password.
Which happens all the time. Amateurs can do that. You don't need a state operation to send a phishing email, and as Podesta seems to have answered it and given away his entire email collection.
Right. And what is unique about these phishes, or the reason people believe these phishes have the specific mark of Russia, one is the phishes themselves are servers and specific kinds of codes that this Russian intelligence agency has used in the past. Mm-hmm. Another one is that once whoever the hacker was that got inside, the way in which the documents were infiltrated, again, tools that Russia has been known to use in the past.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who are technical experts who still aren't sold. So, you know, there are two groups of people who have followed this closely, who don't agree that this is a slam dunk against Russia. One is there are technical people who say, yeah, you know, you can steal Vladimir's hammer and use it to build a house, and you'll blame Vladimir for it when, in fact, somebody else built the house, right?
Right.
Which is the scenario you're describing. The other people who disagree point to Julian Assange, who has repeatedly said it wasn't Russia, assuming that he knows everything about the provenance of how he got the documents. So
yeah, and he can't know. I mean, somebody might have given it to him. He doesn't know where they came from. So, yeah, go ahead.
Right. Although Craig Murray, used to be UK ambassador to Uzbekistan, said he knows the person who gave them to Assange, and that person is a DNC insider. I don't know. That's the other argument for why
a Democratic
might not believe it.
A Democratic Party insider? He's claiming that is the source for Assange and WikiLeaks.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So what happened now?
What
happened now that suddenly has upped all of this from where we were last September?
Well, what happened now is, one, Clinton lost. I think everybody involved assumed that Clinton was going to win, in which case you cannot make the strongest case about Russia because you've got the entire Clinton administration to do that,
mm-hmm.
right? That opportunity has been shot because Clinton lost and Trump is getting all set to take over. Another really critical thing is Trump refuses to get briefings from these people, and he suggested, oh, I'm going to replace all these people at CIA. So, you know, one of the things that is happening is CIA is looking towards an administration where Trump pretty much ignores them, although he's already named a close Pence buddy to be CIA director. So it's not like he doesn't want a CIA. He's talked to, you know, I think CIA rightly worries that there's going to be a cleaning of the house of people that are there now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's you know, you can argue that CIA is dangerous, but having them cleaned out and replaced with political actors is even more dangerous, right? And that, you know, there is a real concern that that's what he wants to do.
Right. And doing away with the evidence, good, bad, or otherwise, that should eventually be examined by the public on all of this.
Right. And then the other thing that's new now is that Obama said, we're going to do a review.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, CIA wanted to... most generous CIA and people who seem to be Democratic senators and some Democratic House members who've also gotten these briefings more recently. But one of the things that has changed is that President Obama said we're going to do a review,
mm-hmm.
and boom, just like happened on September 8th, 2002, people tried to preempt the process that the intelligence community is going to spend the next month doing by saying, here's the results. And and frankly, you know, like I could see CIA wanting us to think that it was Putin trying to get Trump elected rather than thinking that it was Putin retaliating for things the CIA has done. I could see why CIA would want that. Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, which is why I think the fact that no one is mentioning or not that no one is leaking to the press that has been under consideration, because publicly Russia watchers always point back to that 2011 him blaming Hillary Clinton for protests against him, which he saw as, you know, and I'm not endorsing this view, but he clearly saw as a Hillary U.S., therefore presumably CIA-backed attempt to weaken his government, right?
Same
kind of thing that we're talking about here.
Well, no, that makes sense. I've got just a minute or so here, Marcy Wheeler, so let me get your thoughts on this, because this is a disconnect. We're going to talk about it in the next segment, but this is just a disconnect that's kind of blowing my mind. I know that you live in Michigan, and all of these explosive allegations are now coming about at the exact same time that Republicans in Michigan have successfully argued in court to stop the hand counting of the presidential election results in the race after Green Party candidate Jill Stein, notably not Hillary Clinton and the Democrats, had sought those counts due to concerns of, among other things, hacking of voting and counting systems. So how, on one sense, do we justify this charge, this outrage from Democrats about Russia hacking our elections, pushing for Donald Trump on one hand, and demanding this information be made public, but the failure by those very same Democrats to insist on a publicly verifiable count of the results of the election so we can find whether it was hacked or not, whether it's, you know, by Russia or by anyone else? This is a huge disconnect to me that I'm sure you can help me understand, Marcy.
I can't help you understand, and I even think that the data to really understand what happened to the election, it was Hillary's data, and I don't think local, because I was a poll watcher, voter protector on the election. So, you know, after the election, I was being asked, "Tell me what happened. All your reports during election day, we don't have them anymore." So I had to repeat all the things I remembered happening while I was, you know, in the polls for 5-6 hours.
Written reports that disappeared?
No. They belong to Hillary. Uh-huh. Rather than to the local party,
so I
for
see.
The local party to do something. And by the way, this is happening, as I'm sure you've probably covered. The Republicans said we couldn't have a recount because it would cost too much money. They said it might cost $5 million. And at the same time as they were making those claims, they have been pushing through a voter suppression bill, you know, voter ID bill, new one, that to make it constitutionally sound, they are spending $10 million on. So can't afford $5 million to count the vote, can't afford $10 million to suppress the vote. And the woman who's pushing that through is the single Republican in the state of Michigan who's screaming fraud, 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 fraud to justify her bill.
Right.
She's going to be my my county clerk starting in January. But, my vote's never going to count again.
And those are the same ones who are saying fraud, 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 except in the actual election here, no fraud whatsoever, no reason to look at all. And you know, I beat up on Republicans all the time for this, but in this case, it's really the Democrats, you know, they're in Michigan, they're claiming that it was, you know, Jill Stein is not an aggrieved party, therefore she's not entitled to a count, even though it was incredibly close in Michigan. But Hillary Clinton, the Democratic candidate, she is clearly aggrieved, and yet neither she nor the Democrats are yelling and screaming about verifying the results, even while they're making these claims about Russia hacking the election. I don't understand that disconnect.
No, and, you know, and I don't know, I also don't understand the entire time, like, it is a tremendous problem that Russia was hacking Hillary and that, you know, there was some, I never understood the theory by which these leaked documents were going to affect the election, particularly given that all these other FOIA documents, and Jim Comey was going to go on TV and talk about how reckless Hillary and her aides were with, you know. I never understood that model. But the whole time that was going on, everyone was saying Russia, 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 and not North Carolina, Wisconsin. We know because circuit courts around the country wrote opinions that said somebody is tampering with the vote. And it said the North Carolina GOP tampering with the vote.
Right.
Wisconsin GOP tampering with the vote. They tried to prevent single ticket voting, straight ticket voting here in Michigan, tampering with the vote. You know, where was that complaint? Because we don't need Vladimir Putin to steal our elections. There are plenty of people here in the United States who are, who courts have found are doing it, and yet this is not the primary issue, right?
Yeah, and that's, you know, that was actually one of the reasons why, you know, I'm concerned about this focus on Russia in this, because if you can prove that, oh, Russia didn't hack it, or we don't have evidence that Russia hacked it, that means our election was perfectly fine and was safe, and there was no insiders tampering, there was no voter suppression, everything's fine once you rule out Russia. And by the way, that also doesn't rule out all of these other countries who would also have an interest in manipulating our elections. I'm having trouble making sense of it, and sounds like you are too. Marcy Wheeler.
Have I teed you up perfectly for the next segment?
You have indeed. Thank you. Marcy Wheeler, thank you as ever for all you do. I suspect your work is going to be as important as ever at emptywheel.net and on the Twitters where people should follow you, also at emptywheel. Thanks for all you're doing, and I suspect we will be talking to you much in the coming years. Thanks, Marcy.
Take care, Brad.
All right. Speaking of which, a quick break, and we're back with these court decisions saying, no, there will be no counting in Michigan or Pennsylvania, and all worse. All of that straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman on the Bradcast. Bradcast, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. It is absolutely maddening, this disconnect that I was talking about with Marcy between wanting to investigate, what did Russia do to our elections, but then not wanting to investigate what anyone did to our elections. Desi Doyen, I forgot to say hello to you.
Oh,
earlier.
Hello. Yes, I am
here. I didn't
here.
Forget. I was I busy, know. Actually.
It was some stuff you had to talk about.
Indeed. So here's where we are. As of airtime right now in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, and in Wisconsin, with the so-called recounts, they are in effect over. At least if the various court rulings that are now in place in all three states all now stand, which I think they are likely to do at this late date. All right, let's start in Michigan. Late on Friday, as I mentioned, the Michigan Supreme Court denied Jill Stein's motion to appeal a 3 Republican judge appeals court panel that had ordered the recount that had begun in Michigan and ran for about 3 days with the approval of a federal judge. That appellate court ordered that the hand count of paper ballots be stopped immediately last week on the grounds that Jill Stein was not an aggrieved party, that she had no right to ask for this hand count in the first place of these paper ballots that had otherwise never been counted by human beings, only tabulated by optical scanners, either correctly or incorrectly. No one can know unless the paper ballots are actually counted by humans. But because she was not an aggrieved party, according to state law and according to that 3 Republican judge court, she has no right in the first place to seek the post-election hand count of paper ballots that had otherwise been tallied on those computers. That, even though Donald Trump's margin over Hillary Clinton in the state was just over 10,000 votes out of some 5 million cast, and the fact that during the 3 days that counting was allowed in Michigan to go on early last week, tens of thousands of ballots in hundreds of precincts across the state were deemed quote, unrecountable, unquote, under an arcane Michigan state law that disallows precincts to be counted in a recount if there are any mismatches, even a single ballot mismatch between the number of votes, the number of voters, I should say, signed into the poll books and the number of ballots sealed in the ballot boxes. Now, there's all kinds of reasons those numbers could be off for completely legitimate reasons, but those reasons don't matter. If they're off by one vote, that's that. Hundreds, they cannot be counted in a recount. Hundreds of precincts in Detroit alone were deemed unrecountable during those 3 days, despite tens of thousands of ballots said to have contained no vote at all for president, about twice as many presidential undervotes as had been reported in the 2008 and 2012 elections. But we are now likely to never know if those ballots contain votes for president or not. Again, tens of thousands in Detroit and Wayne County, which otherwise reportedly went to Clinton over Trump by a 2-1 margin. We will not know because the Michigan State Supreme Court has now denied Jill Stein's appeal. They denied that appeal late on Friday by a vote of 3-2. It was a split decision. Two judges who had made Republican president-elect Donald Trump, as they call him in AP calls him, who had made his list of possible U.S. Supreme Court nominees, had recused themselves from the case as Jill Stein had requested. But she still ended up losing in a 3-2 decision. The Michigan Secretary of State said on Friday that because the recount was halted before it was finished, the original results that were certified on November 28, those will stand. Those will be sent to Congress and the Electoral College. Donald Trump, according to the original unverified results, again, completely unverified by human beings, beat Hillary Clinton in the state by officially by 10,704 votes out of about 5 million cast, according to the Secretary of State's office. Jill Stein issued a statement late Friday saying she was disappointed in the decision by the Michigan Supreme Court not to hear the appeal. So they didn't even hear the appeal. They just rejected even hearing it. Although she added, we are not surprised given the political motives of the majority on the court. The fact is, she says, that in Michigan, political cronyism, bureaucratic obstruction, and legal maneuvering have run roughshod over the democratic process. A recount should not be this difficult or controversial, she says. It should be automatic. If you take money out of a bank, the teller counts it twice, and the second time, they count it in front of your eyes. It should be well understood that something as important as a presidential election requires a basic level of quality assurance and verification. And yet the 3 days of recounts unearthed serious flaws in our voting system. And the decision on Friday, she said, creates more cause for unease. 87 optical scan machines failed on election day in Detroit alone, many in communities of color. And due to state law, almost half of Detroit's votes can't even be recounted. The protracted resistance to a recount only reinforces the perception that Donald Trump's cronies and the entrenched powers in the state either benefit from this broken system or have something to hide. That's the state of Michigan. If we have some time, I'll share with you an account of one of the counters in Michigan trying to get those ballots hand counted and the obstructionism that was going on by Trump's attorneys, Republican attorneys that were flown in apparently from all across the country. He described their Brooks Brothers suits and how they were keeping anybody from being able to count anything. They spent hours just sitting there listening to objections by those attorneys. See if I have some time for that. All right, that is Michigan. So Michigan and its electoral votes will go apparently to Donald Trump on December 19 when the Electoral College votes, if in fact the electors vote that way, which we don't know yet. But in any event, that's Michigan. In Pennsylvania, today, a U.S. District Court judge, a federal judge, has rejected Jill Stein's bid for a Pennsylvania statewide recount or hand count of whatever existing paper ballots actually exist. and a forensic analysis of the touchscreen systems and the tabulators that exist across most of the state. Most of the ballots, most of the votes in Pennsylvania could not even be counted if it was ordered by a federal court. So this from U.S. District Judge Paul Diamond, a George W. Bush appointee today, for whatever that's worth. He wrote in his decision ruling out a statewide hand count on the federal level. He wrote, unsuccessful Green Party candidate Jill Stein and Pennsylvania voter Randall Wrights allege that because Pennsylvania's voting machines might have been hacked during last month's election, I must order the Commonwealth to conduct a recount of the votes cast for president. He says there are at least six separate grounds requiring me to deny plaintiff's motion. Most importantly, there is no credible evidence that any hack occurred. And compelling evidence that Pennsylvania's voting system was not in any way compromised. Moreover, plaintiffs' lack of standing, the likely absence of federal jurisdiction, and plaintiffs' unexplained, highly prejudicial delay in seeking a recount are all fatal to their claims for immediate relief. Further, plaintiffs have not met any of the requirements for the issuance of a mandatory emergency injunction. Finally, granting the relief plaintiffs seek would make it impossible for the Commonwealth to certify its presidential electors by December 13, as required by federal law. There is some debate about whether December 13 is, in fact, the date that states must, in fact, certify their electors, their results. But in any case, he cites that as federal law, thus inexcusably disenfranchising some 6 million Pennsylvania voters. If this count and this examination were to proceed as the computer scientists have begged and pleaded for. For all these reasons, writes the judge, I am compelled to refuse plaintiff's request for injunctive relief. He also went on in his 31-page opinion to say that Jill Stein's request, quote, borders on the irrational. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Don't look at me like that, Desi.
Well, Goyen. My mouth is agape.
Borders
on irrational when he totally ignored the testimony and the submitted by the computer scientists.
Yeah,
I guess he considers them to be irrational as well.
Yeah, it borders on the irrational to suspect hacking occurred in Pennsylvania.
Oh my goodness. So he ignored when the computer scientist said, yes, we can get this forensic audit of the machines done in time. We believe that we can. The judge flat out said he doesn't believe that can happen. He ignored the computer scientists. These are experts who have far greater expertise than this judge, I am certain. Mm-hmm. He ignored their testimony that said, hey, we can't tell until we can get to the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, oh, there's no evidence.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I wish someone had warned America about this possibility prior to now. let's see. In Stein, in her statement, she said, "Let's see that the lawsuit had cited the state's incomprehensible labyrinth and impossibly burdensome election regime as being a disaster for ordinary voters." No way to tell if Pennsylvania votes were counted accurately. The truth is, it's really not difficult to learn, she says. Simply count the paper ballots in the optical scan districts and permit a forensic examination of the voting systems in touchscreen districts, which, in fact, has happened at least once. Well, it actually happened twice. The computer scientist who was working on certifying new touchscreen systems back in Pennsylvania some years ago was showing how these touchscreens couldn't be hacked. He was demonstrating that to someone, and he accidentally hacked the results during the demonstration. So then they went and they said, well, okay, we better use a different system. But then some years later in 2011, there was a forensic study done in one county, Venango County, that found that, in fact, there had been an unknown computer accessing the central tabulator for hours at a time on multiple occasions. But other than that, it borders on the irrational, according to the judge, the U.S. federal district judge, to suspect that hacking could have occurred in Pennsylvania. And I guess it also borders on the irrational to think that any election insiders without hacking would just want to change the results. That's crazy talk, apparently. So Stein notes that on Friday, President Obama took the extraordinary step to order a full review of hacking-related activity aimed at disrupting the 2016 presidential election. Amid increasing doubt over the security, accuracy, and fairness of the U.S. election system. And she said the announcement is yet the latest indication of the public's lack of trust in the voting election system, as multiple irregularities have already been discovered during the aborted recounts in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, and in Wisconsin, which is described as a political horror show in the New York Times today, she says, underscoring the need for reform of the election system. If the president, the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, and the CIA are concerned about hacking, they should put their full weight and authority behind an independent and transparent forensic audit of the machines and counting of the paper ballots. Stein said, let's move forward with examining the many problems that have already come to light in this recount, including and especially the preferential machine failure, human error, and uncounted votes already evident in the under-resourced communities of color. She cites Donald Trump and the GOP allies as doing everything they can to block the count in Pennsylvania. They have used Pennsylvania's decentralized and bureaucratic election system to suppress the recount, she says, after news broke last week that Donald Trump's lead in the state had fallen from roughly 70,000 to 49,000 votes within 0.3 of triggering an automatic statewide recount. The Trump campaign filed a legal objection in state court, arguing that a recount would somehow put Pennsylvania at grave risk and that lawyers for the Republican Party have been crisscrossing the state to fight recounts in courthouses from Philadelphia to Pittsburgh. In Montgomery County, for example, she said Republican lawyers allege that several voters could not file their recount affidavits because, remember, Pennsylvania law is so horrible, is so shameful, is so terrible that it requires three voters in each precinct to file a notarized affidavit and pay $50 affidavit and find $50 filing fee to get a count only in that one precinct. So Republican lawyers were saying that these people who had filed had not paid their $50 fee, even though, according to Stein, that they had paid almost double that fee. Trump surrogates have argued that it would require 27,000 voters in all of the state's 9,000-plus precincts to request a recount in order for the voters in any single precinct to be recounted.
Wow. So all have to file in order for one to be able to be recounted.
That's what, at least that's what the Republican and Trump lawyers were
arguing. Wow. It's amazing the resources and the people that the Republicans were willing to put toward fighting a recount in Pennsylvania. I wonder if anybody else might have had lawyers and resources that could have helped with that.
I can't think of anybody. Yeah. They're busy.
Drawing a blank.
Yeah. A Stein attorney said Pennsylvania places an absurd and unacceptable barrier to Democratic participation. Voters don't know if their votes count, and there's no way for them to find out. We cannot hide democracy inside a black box. Well, we have done so. And it has been done so not just in Michigan and in Pennsylvania, but also in the great state of Wisconsin. The Badger State has now certified, as we went to air here, so I haven't got to look at the numbers, the final numbers yet, but the state Wisconsin Election Commission has now certified Donald Trump's victory over Hillary Clinton today in that state, following what suffices for a recount. Before we went to air today, the Wisconsin Election Commission had reported that Trump, and it's interesting how this works, Trump had picked up 628 votes across the state. Hillary Clinton had an increase of 653 votes across the state. Jill Stein picked up 68 votes, but that does not actually tell us how many miscounted votes there were. And this is something I've been trying to warn about for years. For example, it happened up in New Hampshire during the 2008 primary election count. There was thousands of votes that were miscounted by the optical scan systems up in New Hampshire. But the way it works if let's say the optical scan systems had 100 extra votes for Donald Trump in one county or in one precinct, and 100 too few votes for Hillary Clinton. Well, if you add that all together, it's zero votes. It's a perfect count. That's how election officials, if you take away Donald Trump's 100, you add Hillary's 100, well, there was no change in the vote total. That's the way the margin remains exactly the same. That's the way they actually report on this in the media and the way the states do it. The state election officials, they don't want to say that things were counted terribly wrong. In any event, Trump picked up 628, Clinton picked up 653.
And we don't know why these votes, how they came out of nowhere, well, that weren't there before.
Well, we might if we look in each particular place, but we only know that the only areas that were hand counted were largely the smaller, rural, largely Republican-leaning counties. They're the only ones that hand counted the paper ballots. The large Democratic-leaning towns and counties, Milwaukee, they just ran the same paper ballots through the optical scan system all over again, and they counted them either correctly or incorrectly. Who knows? There is some attempt now to try to get at these optical scan systems, apparently create what's called an image, a ballot image, an electronic photograph of the ballot. There's an effort to try to, by citizens, to try to get at those so that they can do an actual manual overseeable count, at least of those electronic images. That effort may move forward, but the headline, as I say, that just flew across the Twitters is that Trump is certified as the winner in the state of Wisconsin, following for what now suffices as a recount in the only state to do any kind of actual statewide post-election count of election results this year, underscoring once again why we have got to get it right on election night. There are no do-overs, no post-election audits, no such thing as a recount. You got to get it right on election night. If you want to publicly count the ballots, do it right then and there at the precinct with all the parties watching and the results posted then and there. Because there is no later. Quick break, and we're back with more. I'm Brad. This is the Bradcast. On December 7th, 2016, I volunteered as an observer with Recount Michigan 2016. I showed up at 9 a.m. sharp in the heart of Detroit in heavily Democratic Wayne County, Michigan. It was a bloodbath. This is from a piece from Nick Sharp late last week at Medium. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Sharp goes on to say, I did not count a single vote during my entire first hour shift. Trump's legal team was there in force, circling the room like sharks. They were challenging everything, gumming up the works and disqualifying whole precincts. I was only aware of a single Green Party attorney plus one law student in my large room. Many challenges had one or more Trump lawyers speaking with election officials and no legal advocate present for the other side. They were simply outnumbered and outgunned. Every recount table had one to two Trump observers present, each one holding written scripts to challenge every single precinct, regardless of the fact. Even if the challenge is clearly contrived, still it has to be recorded on the spot. The civic employees must fill out a form in longhand and write up the report, also in longhand, before they can go back to work and counting ballots. He says, I sat at my table for a full hour before our first box of ballots was even unsealed. Around the time our first box was finally getting unsealed, an exasperated election official shouted an announcement to the room. The election official announced that Trump's head lawyer had just filed a blanket challenge in Lansing. So, and here he says he's paraphrasing from memory, quote, all precincts have already been challenged. You don't have to read your scripts anymore. We're not writing down the challenges. If you still want to read them, go ahead and read them. but we're not writing them down anymore. If you tell us to write them down, we're not going to do it. Nonetheless, he says, Trump observers kept reading their challenges and civic employees kept counting ballots, trying to concentrate on the count. A miscount of 1 in 1,000 could and did disqualify entire precincts from the recount. Thousands of votes and hours of counting were disqualified if even 1 ballot in 1,000 was missed amid the chaos in the room. Where did all these Republican lawyers come from? He asked. They look like they walked in straight out of a Brooks Brothers catalog. Sound familiar?
Yes.
I told you this was sounding more and more like 2000. Was it last week? I said it sounded more like 2000 than even 2004.
Yep.
He concludes, I can only speak from my own experience, but I wonder, were there similar swarms of Republican lawyers in the red counties challenging everything? Well, they were ready to go. And the Democrats were nowhere to be found, and the Green Party had to scramble to come up with any type of infrastructure to manage something like this, which is just unprecedented across three states. And in the end, the Republicans won. The ballots weren't counted. We will never really know who won or lost the 2016 presidential election. At least according to the electoral votes in those three states. We got to do better. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, to my guest today, Marcy Wheeler of EmptyWheel.net, and to you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, download it, as well as all of them, at bradblog.com for free anytime. Or your favorite podcast site like iTunes, where we hope you'll give us a good review, make it a little easier for everyone else to find what we're doing here as well. You can drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And I'm on the Facebooks and the Twitters. Please share at the Brad Blog. That is it. Until we meet again, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.